Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County. This is episode 38, Getting Your Head Right.
And welcome back to Color Country Politics. I am Jenny Hendricks.
I'm Jesse Harris.
And we are really, really excited today. We've got Amy Nielsen here with us. Amy is a clinical mental health counselor here in Cedar City. She's in private practice, and she serves people from all over the region. And we've got Amy on today because we're kind of going to get real with you. There's been so many things in the news and so many people that sort of have touched my life personally, and sort of a conversation in the community about suicide. And so we wanted to bring a mental health professional on, and thank you so much for filling that role, to talk about kind of what's going on in Southern Utah and Cedar City and Iron County. And is this something that we need to kind of elevate the conversation about? And is this something that we can really address as a community? So again, Amy, thank you for coming on. And let's start just with some statistics. I pulled some and you know, just to kind of get us started here, I think, so my numbers come from 2017, so yours are probably a lot newer, but from what I have, it says that suicide is the seventh leading cause of death in the state of Utah. That was shocking to me. I did not realize that. There's been, nationally, there's been a 30% increase in the rate of death by suicide from 2000 to 16. Suicides among girls and women have gone up, and suicides among boys and men have gone up. Now that's nationally, and I think you've got something that might give us a little hope as far as Utah and our local areas.
Right.
So what have you got? What numbers have you brought?
Right, so I was provided some great information from Southwest Behavioral Health coming from a database on suicide in for like Iron, Washington, and Beaver counties, and then comparing it to the state.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, and this comes all the way from 1999 as the earliest year,
okay,
and then up to 2017. So it's going to kind of align with the years that you have.
That's okay.
For this particular data that I'm talking about right now. Anyways, overall in Utah, it's not been as drastic a rise as what the national numbers are that you have. So we're actually only seeing kind of a slight increase, honestly. And in our area in Iron County, it's interesting, it kind of increased there for a few years, and then between 2008 and 2012, it peaked. Okay, we have like some high numbers there.
Yeah.
And then it actually drops down quite a bit more. So looking in comparison, so we're having per 100,000 population. So in the 08 to 2012 time, we were looking at, I'm just going to show Iron County here in that spectrum. It was like about 24 people per 100,000 was the suicide rate there. And then now here in we're not 2017, but we're closer.
But the statistics from 2017.
From 2017 have dropped to 17.
Okay.
So we're actually have come down.
Okay.
Now, does that mean it's all getting better and it's all great? No, that could be, there's so many factors that could be taken into consideration there. So
That's really interesting. And, you know, before we started recording, we were actually talking about some of these statistics. And one of the things that you brought up was the economic factors.
Yeah.
And from 08 to 12, that was kind of when the bottom fell out of everything.
Right.
So.
Correct. We had a huge amount of our life stressors drastically go up, putting a lot of pressure on everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And rural areas hit much harder in that economic downturn. A lot of places still haven't bounced back.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm kind of curious just because I think we see some pressures rising even now.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's waiting for the next shoe to drop now.
Yeah.
We've all experienced that, and I think we can see the numbers and costs and everything going up. So we're all, like, you can see the tension rising among people now. And that is something I am seeing in my practice, just people coming in for stress.
Okay.
The anxiety related around that everybody is kind of waiting.
Mm-hmm.
I hope not everybody. But the ones coming in to see addressing that factor, like, there's that worry that it's all going to fall out from under them.
It's like almost like the anticipation is worse than if something really would just happen. Right. Then if it happens, you just deal with it.
Right.
But it's the anticipation that kind of creates that anxiety.
That.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, one of the statistics that I was reading as I was kind of prepping for this recording is, and maybe you can help me, you know, verify whether this is true or not, is it seems like the age of people attempting or actually accomplishing suicide is getting younger and younger and younger. Are you seeing that, or is it just more in the media? Is it just more in our faces?
Right. No, that actually I do see. Say I've seen it in my practice, and also let me refer here to as well. So the prevention department of Southwest also did a study. I want to make sure I call it the right thing. It's the Student Health and Risk Prevention Survey, mm-hmm. and they conducted that among the 6th to 12th graders in Southwest Utah.
Okay.
And when they did that, what they found in here, it talks a lot about kind of mental health mm-hmm. needs, not necessarily specifically suicide in these increases, but that there's a drastic increase for youth in these age ranges needing that higher level of mental health mm-hmm. treatment compared to before. So it was like an increase. It was an increase of 14% needed that level of treatment in 2015 wow. and 19%
okay.
in 2019.
So you're seeing sort of a higher level of mental health stressors at a younger
right.
age.
So they're needing to seek treatment because mm-hmm. they're hitting that threshold of, hey, I need help
mm-hmm.
Compared to I can cope with it or mm-hmm. work with my family with mm-hmm. it. So we're seeing that increase. And then to speak to the statistic you're asking about, what I'm seeing in my office that is also here is that what they found is, where is it right here? The number of kids seriously considering suicide has also gone up with every grade surveyed, with the largest increase among our youngest youth, which was sixth grade.
Oh,
so they
man.
Have the largest group. And I have seen that in my practice. Mm. When I first started practicing over a decade ago, if somebody was coming in for suicide, and I haven't necessarily seen numbers grow in the number that I see, but the population was coming in was our young adults, mm-hmm. maybe some adults, and then, 14 up,
mm-hmm.
you know, in that range of contemplating or having ideation mm-hmm. and stuff like that. In the last couple years, I've seen a huge number coming in from 6th and 7th and 8th graders.
Wow.
But really what worries me is those 6th graders
yeah.
and then even younger, having 4th and 5th graders
wow.
coming in, having those in their head. And instead of previously where I would have heard, you know, I feel devastated, I'm upset, I don't know how to do this, I'm struggling, to I'm going to kill myself.
Wow.
Like that being the statement, parents coming and saying, I heard my 4th grader say,
oh, man.
I'm going to kill myself.
How traumatic as a parent. I mean, just how
right.
how devastating. So we can clearly agree that this is an issue. This is something that is happening in our community. This is something that we need to address. Okay, so if we agree that that is an issue,
sure.
let's talk about why is it an issue? What is happening? What are the root causes of this? Not just in kids that young, but sort of across the board. So in your practice, what are you seeing what are the stressors? What is the mental health issue that's causing so many people to feel that way?
What I see in my practice, and this is partly coming from the way I view treating mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So primarily the diagnosis and things that we're looking at that we see in conjunction with this is either depression or anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Huge numbers growth in both of those,
okay.
in all ages, okay? And I can't quote exactly where the statistics come from, but we know there is a drastic increase nationwide, local-wide, everything of depression and anxiety
okay.
in all ages, but especially our youth,
wow.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I look to treat somebody with depression or anxiety, there's kind of body chemistry and mm-hmm. wiring kind of stuff that mm-hmm. we look at. Some mm-hmm. people, they just... You know, they're just not pumping the right
sure,
chemicals
sure.
that they need to get that sense of well-being,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, and so they get off and their brain's trying to compensate and it has negative thinking that mm-hmm. comes up with that. And then the other factor is what I see the majority of the time and it comes from unmet needs. Okay? And the body is trying to speak the unmet needs through anxiety. Every human being has anxiety.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. It's the way the body is talking, saying, hey, I need this. When mm-hmm. we're hungry, our body talks to us, right?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And we get a certain amount of anxiety that says, hey, go find some food.
Right.
Right? So it then motivates us to do that. But if we have these needs that we don't quite know what they are, then our person here just gets that energy. That energy is flooding them. It's flushing through them. They're like, I don't know what to do with this. Mm-hmm. It just keeps coming. They start to try to make sense of it. So now, you know, is it because I'm not good enough at school? My teacher looks at me and I'm not good enough for my teacher. She hates me or he hates me. Nobody likes me. My friends don't want to be around me. You know, whatever it is that they're kind of their storyline that they're mm-hmm. creating. And that comes from many places.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll create a storyline that creates needs. So it might not connected or attachment. That's the biggest issue right there that I see. Mm-hmm. Is lack of connection and attachment.
Why is that an issue right now? Because I don't think it was an issue, you know, 30 years ago, 35 years ago when I was in high school. I don't think we were dealing with the same things. There were different things that we were dealing with. You know, 80s hair being one of them.
Glad I missed that.
But I think that the stressors that society has in front of us right now are different than the stressors that we had. So in your practice, you know, when you're talking to people, what is causing the anxiety? What is causing that lack of connection?
Right. So kind of it differs depending on the generation I'm working with. Okay. Obviously in the adult population, their issues are slightly different mm-hmm. or drastically different.
Yeah.
than our younger population. In our older population, some of it speaks to just what we were talking about earlier, like with economics and things
yeah.
like that, you know,
yeah.
just pressures and then this expectation of what happiness looks like, mm-hmm. what well-being looks like and struggling with that. And also struggling in relationships as
sure.
well when people feel inadequate mm-hmm. and they don't open up and connect very well in relationships either.
Mm-hmm.
But if we start moving down the ages in our generations here, the more, I can't say it causes it because nobody has the research, I think, yet that flat out says cause it, but I think we all can see the correlation between the more screen time,
yeah.
the more access they're having to computers, gaming, mm-hmm. smartphones, any of it, the less human connection
right.
is happening. And as human beings, we actually need
yeah.
connection, which is not just sitting next to somebody gaming. I mean, there's a certain amount of fun. I like to play a video game with my boys once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm a mean Mario Kart player, though I still can't win them.
No, my son beats me handily every time.
No kidding, that's hilarious.
But I tried so hard, I'm getting closer, but I still have not beat them.
That's cute.
But our kiddos, they need eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
They need somebody to look them in the face and talk with them, ask them about their day.
Mm-hmm.
They need to, it gives them a sense of existence
mm-hmm.
to have that. And so if kiddo walks up to mom or dad or older sibling even or anything, and they're sitting here looking on their phone and they're like, yep, yep, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Even though I'm like, oh yeah, I answered my child, they didn't get that eye contact
uh-huh.
that gives them that sense of existence.
That's interesting because I think a lot of times we talk about smartphones and screen time and that sort of thing in the context of we need to really pay attention and possibly limit the amount of screen time for kids. But you just brought up a really interesting point. If the parents are on their screens as well, limiting the kids' screen time probably doesn't matter as much because everybody
right.
sort of needs to limit their screen time so you can have that personal engagement. That's really an interesting
right.
point.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, and how often, like, so I'm a people watcher, okay, and this may intimidate anybody who's listening. Any of us who study people or people watchers, but I can go into stores around town and just watch. I'm just fascinated and just watch. And you can see mom over here on their phone and kid over here on their device.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
this is a great babysitter.
Yeah.
This kid keeps my kid busy over here so I can be on my Facebook mm-hmm. or my Instagram or even my grocery list.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or
right.
whatever. Like, let's keep you just quiet and busy over here so uh-huh. I can just get this done.
Right.
Now, I hope nobody ever takes this as judgment, because myself, I have handed my kid my phone for a minute, like, give me just a minute.
Give me a second. Yeah.
You got to do what you got to do.
Right.
So this is not to pass judgment. It's just to create awareness. Mm-hmm. Awareness that there actually is important things that happen in the interaction when we look our child in the face and either correct them or take care of their need, or even just snuggle them in because mm-hmm. they're having a moment, mm-hmm. or carrying them under our arm out to the car because they're not handling the
right.
whatever, rather than handing them the device. Okay, there's important body chemistry even that takes
sure.
place. So oxytocin, the bonding chemical, floods when mm-hmm. we have eye-to-eye contact and needs are being met.
Okay.
Okay.
That is really fascinating, because I was going to kind of take this in a whole different direction and kind of tell a story about my daughter and, you know, and her friends and stuff. But I think that having that conversation about adults and parents and adults in children's lives, whether you're a parent or a grandparent, you know, the favorite aunt or what or whatever, that let's check our own screen time.
Okay.
That is really, mm-hmm. I don't mean to go on and on about that, but that's really a fascinating
right.
sort of lane to go down. That
right.
I'm really glad that you brought that up.
Right. If you're gonna explore prevention,
mm-hmm.
then we're gonna be looking at parents, set your mm-hmm. phone down, mm-hmm. literally like all the way down. Leave it in another room.
Uh-huh.
And get that time with your kids. Okay. You know, we hear about the benefits of family dinner together.
Sure.
Well, get off the phone
right.
during family dinner. Make sure they're off their phones, you're off their phones, because again, that bonding attachment is going to take place when a need is getting met mm-hmm. and we're eye to eye.
Yeah.
Where does that happen in our day?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At the okay, at all ages.
Yeah.
It happens.
That was the rule
table.
At our house. We had dinner every night and no phones at the dinner table. And you think about it, how long does it really take to eat dinner? 20 minutes?
Right.
I mean, you can go without your phone for everybody can go without, even
right.
a real estate agent. Can go without her phone for 20 minutes during dinner.
Use that as your right. charge time and your charge time.
I love that. Yeah,
right.
that's
okay.
perfect.
Right, and
that's
if you
perfect.
Can't, come see me.
That's
let's look on what that's about. Like, can't we go 20 minutes without
dissect
it?
Dissect that. That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, I do want to bring up the story about my daughter, who's 21, and she's in college, and she's in a sorority, and So my kids were born in 96 and 98. So they really didn't get access to a smartphone until they were much later in high school. But we do see kids who are itty bitty with some kind of a device, some kind of a screen. And you know, this new class of freshmen that was coming in, you know, she's doing her thing. And she called me and she said, "Mom, they're different." She said, "They don't make eye contact. They can't. They don't get sentences. They don't get instruction and following instructions and that's, I mean, have we taken for granted that kind of human interaction?" And what was so shocking to me is she's only 3 years older than these new freshmen that are coming in, but even that amount of age difference, it was so striking to her. The difference, and can you attribute that to kids getting screens and more time younger and younger and younger?
Right. So if we can say that it's a cause, again, we don't know yet. We've got to see some really good data come out on that, right? Some really good research. It gives SU psychology department something to work on.
Okay. I hope they're watching.
But we can definitely see a correlation, and what I see in my office, so transitioning off parents and mm-hmm. then the accountability of our kiddos on these screens, mm-hmm. there is a mm-hmm. difference between communicating online and in person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even now, even as a counselor, we have to take into consideration two different personas when our young people walk in the room. We have their in-person self,
mm-hmm.
and then we have to evaluate and talk with them about their online self.
Mm-hmm.
And there's differences even between them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my suspicion of why we're having such an increase in anxiety in particularly social anxiety, that
uh-huh.
ability to socialize with others, because here in my online persona, I am painting a picture of who I want
who
to
I
be
want to project.
Perceived as,
yeah.
Yeah, what I want to project
mm-hmm.
out there. But then I got to show up in person, and I don't have any Snapchat filters to remove all of my blemishes right. and make my hair perfect and my eyes bigger.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have any of those to change that perception. It's just me in the raw, and that is making our youth really anxious.
That's amazing. My kids are older, so I'm not involved in that, you know, on a daily basis. But you're right. How many images do we see? I mean, even in people my age, you know, how many filtered images do you see? And you're right. The eyes are just a little bit bigger. The lips are just a little bit poutier. And then you show up in person. It's like, oh, that's it.
Right. Well, and even just listen to your reaction just right there. They're fearing that right there.
Yeah.
That letdown. Yeah. That where somebody looks at them and they're not that lit up.
Yeah.
Thing. Now, I really think the majority of people in the world, like, they really are good and they don't grab that. But everybody's afraid that they're grabbing that because I just got 10,000 likes on my duck-lipped, big-eyed picture that was filtered.
Yeah.
Right? So, ooh, that's how I need to show up. Uh-huh. We can't show up like that in life.
Yeah, sorry.
Honestly, I've only ever met one person who is exactly like they are in person as they were online. It was a little disconcerting.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Like because they've had a lot of surgery or because their online profile was just really bad?
The persona was just exactly the same. And I've, you know, been on the internet since like 1994 and, you know, you're used to the idea of there's someone presenting a different self on the internet than they present in person. And for someone to have like no disconnect between the two, it's like, oh, well, that was very unexpected.
Yeah. The internet was just barely around in 1994.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've been at this a long time.
You better believe it.
That's why he's the tech guy. Well, let me kind of segue into, okay, so we recognize that this is a problem. We've kind of talked about what are some likely causes, not proven, but we suspect that there's a lot of these things. As a community here in Southern Utah, if we recognize that these things are issues, if we recognize that it is happening, what are some immediate things we can do? Like if there's somebody who is in our world and is in danger or is suffering some kind of a mental health issue or depression or the anxiety that you're talking about, what are some tools that we can use if somebody in my family is having an issue or a friend or someone else's child, but maybe I can see it. What do we do about that?
Right. So first would be to be able to see it,
mm-hmm.
right? Which means we're going to have to slow our lives down enough. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to disconnect enough
mm-hmm.
to actually attune to the people around us.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that we didn't necessarily talk about, but is a rising thing that I have not normally seen before, is the suicides happening where there's not the evidence around them. Like, you're not hearing, oh yeah, we were all concerned, oh, we've been having them into therapy, oh yeah, like everybody had some wonders or concerns there. We're seeing more show up that they had a really bad day. And there's no evidence around them at all that there was evidence. And so how do you catch that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we've got parents who seem pretty healthy and they're like, mm-hmm. we don't know what's up. And the only thing we could find is on their phone, they got dumped by their boyfriend yesterday or whatever. And even friends saying, we had no idea. Obviously, if that's clear and straightforward like that, there's not a whole lot we can do aside mm-hmm. from what they are doing out there now, and I love the programs they're bringing to school of awareness and support for the kids, even kids supporting kids and mm-hmm. helping that. And they're trying to build a really great awareness for the youth.
Kind of a network of peers talking about it. That's great.
Making it so we can just talk about it. And that was one mm-hmm. thing on the statistics I did talk about, is that the majority of kids would talk.
Okay.
Whether to their peers or to their parents. And the younger the kids were, we're more likely to talk to the parents mm-hmm. compared to peers, but the talking was still there, that's still possible and open. But the talking's got to happen,
mm-hmm.
right? So we have to attune mm-hmm. to the people around us. And when you observe those things, let's just be real about it and talk about it. Like anything else, the more education and awareness we have around it gives us more power to work with it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And another factor that drives, well, really like a major factor that drives depression and anxiety is shame.
Mm.
And what eliminates shame faster than anything is to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can even just talk about it, hey, I noticed you're having a hard day. Hey, I just want you to know I'm aware of you. Hey, you matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the things that are probably going on in their mind, like I'm not good enough, I'm worthless,
mm-hmm.
people don't care about me. That can be countered to an extent, to an extent, by mattering.
Mm-hmm.
People just showing up in their life and mattering. So we need to take into consideration that and make sure we're speaking that. Get off my phone long enough to look at my kid and say, you matter to me.
Yeah.
You matter so much to me, I'm not even on my phone and put it away.
Yeah.
Okay, there's more that's spoken in those actions
sure.
than anything. But even talking about extended out of your family,
mm-hmm.
you know, we've gotten away, like, look at our youth. They interact with each other online.
Right.
They mm-hmm. hang out with their friends online.
Right.
Okay, they don't even go to their houses. I think it's, like, weird. Okay, I tell my teenage boys, I'm like, invite your friends over. And they're like, Mom,
why?
My friends that don't go to so people's weird. Houses. Right?
Exactly.
That's
funny.
But
that's so weird to me.
Right? But that physical connection needs to take place. That eye-to-eye contact mm-hmm. needs to take place. But that creates the attunement that then we can be talking and saying, hey, I see you're having a rough time.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. The shame comes down.
Uh-huh.
We can get some help and work on those things.
So I know that there's, I've heard of the myth that by bringing it up, somehow you might be putting it into someone's mind, or if they weren't thinking about it, maybe they're thinking about it now if you ask them about it. My understanding is that's not the case, that if we do have that language to ask, are you thinking about harming yourself? Are you okay? Are you not okay? So in your experience, talking to people and asking those questions is beneficial. It's not harmful.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely. And for us, whether it was a cause or not, maybe in past generations,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. But what we see now is it doesn't matter at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting talked to about
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If it's mm-hmm. not going to come from us in a healthy way, I promise you they're getting it from the rappers who are rapping about it,
mm.
the singers who are singing about
yeah.
it, the media that, I mean, look at the shows that mm-hmm. have come out over the last couple of years. It's blasted in these youth's face that
mm-hmm.
this is an option. We're going to even show you how. We're going to give you ideas. We're going to glamorize and glorify it.
It's horrifying.
It's spread in our media.
Wow.
So you can either let your kids learn about this concept, the suicide and, mm-hmm. and self-harm and negative thinking. You can let them learn about it from the rappers.
Mm.
Or we can sit down and just be real about it and
mm-hmm.
talk about it,
mm-hmm.
be upfront about it. You used great words, just saying, hey, like, are you thinking of harming yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Has that ever come to your
mm-hmm.
mind? How can we support you
mm-hmm.
in overcoming these things?
And the Safe UT app, I'm guessing, is one of those tools that they have at their disposal too, isn't it?
Ask that again.
The Safe UT app that's out there.
Is that the one that the kids use in the
yeah.
high schools to kind of connect with
yeah.
each other and... So they can report, my understanding is that they can report, and it's anonymous.
Yeah, you can report, hey, there's someone who I think is, you know, at risk right now,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, there's something going on, or you can say, hey, I'm at risk.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right, I think that's awesome.
And it'll go to the school counselor, I think, and maybe the resource officer, depending on...
I think it's all anonymous, and so
okay.
you can just get anonymous help right from the phone.
Wow, okay.
So they can get access
mm-hmm.
right there
mm-hmm.
through that
yeah.
as well.
That's amazing.
So, but I encourage as well... If somebody is concerned about someone, then absolutely talk to your school counselor.
Mm-hmm.
Talk
mm-hmm.
to your teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Just get it out there. In the moment, it's excruciating for mm-hmm. the person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's embarrassing and it's hard and they just want to crawl inside themselves. But I usually get them after those moments.
Okay, yeah.
And they're grateful to be alive.
And kind of, yeah, put those pieces back together. You know, it's a long-term solution to a short-term problem.
Absolutely.
You know, and one of the things that I think is so positive just recently, is there was a $150 million gift from the Huntsman family to the Huntsman Center for mental health. And I think that mental health, the conversation around mental health, I think is becoming more normal. Like you're talking about depression and anxiety and the chemical factors, mm-hmm. and it's not just something that everybody can snap out of. you know, sometimes there's physiological things that are going on as well as mental things going on, and it's sort of a soup that you have to
figure out. That's usually the case. Yeah. I promise you, it is always both.
So I'm glad to see that there's that kind of investment. I was listening to a podcast a couple of weeks ago, and there's some legislative things that are happening. There's a couple of legislators who have really taken this on as a passionate project to talk about mental health and create sort of avenues legislatively to make those paths easier. So I'm glad to see that. Is there anything else that you would like the community to know about mental health, suicide prevention, anything like that?
Yeah. One thing, it came across in the messages coming from Southwest, but I also want to reiterate it, put both of our testimonies together on that, is that overall, if you look at the statistics and you look at the big picture, overall, the majority of people really are genuinely healthy.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Like, they really are.
Good.
Okay? Mm-hmm. We have things we need to talk about and things we need to be aware of, but it doesn't help anybody to be driven by fear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the more we're driven by fear, the more this is going to get worse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So really remembering that really overall, we've got really amazing youth. We have really amazing adults. A lot of people doing really healthy, awesome things. We're learning more and more every day to how to make things even better. So there really is a huge amount of hope and awesome stuff out there. We create awareness because there's still a percentage that we need to take into account and get the support and love that these people need, that everybody needs, mm-hmm. really. To get their needs met so that we're all, as a community, healthier.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't forget them, and we want to give them that space and time to have that attention. But don't lose sight of the reality that really overall, this is a small population still.
Good. That's
and there's
great.
So much hope. Don't be terrified
uh-huh.
that your kid, for sure, like statistically means everybody's going to have somebody
right.
in their family.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah, we do see it a lot more, and a lot mm-hmm. more lives are touched by it. That's true,
mm-hmm.
but being driven by fear is still not going to help that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's, that's a great, there's a lot to do.
Yeah, that's a great thought to leave it on that, you know, as a community, we're actually doing pretty good. We just need to be aware and understand those who aren't necessarily.
Right. And okay. get off your phones.
And get off your phones.
I will not.
You heard it here. Unless you're watching Color Country Politics, then you can be on your phone.
Right.
Amy, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate your expertise and your insights and your willingness to share your time with us today.
Sure.
This has been Color Country Politics, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.